This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The upcoming holiday weekends are the two biggest food weekends of the year. So on this archive edition of Fresh Air, we have a 1989 interview with one of America's most celebrated chefs, Julia Child. With her 1961 book, Mastering the Art of French Cooking, Julia Child helped introduce Americans to classic French cuisine. In 1963, she started her long-running TV series, The French Chef. She'll be back on public TV this spring with a new season of her series, Cooking with the Master Chefs. Julia Child grew up in Pasadena, California. I asked her what food she ate as a girl.
I grew up in the teens and the 20s when most people had, middle class people had maids or had someone to help. And we had very sensible New England type food because my mother came from New England. Of, you know, roasts and vegetables and fresh peas and mashed potatoes. But nobody discussed food a great deal because it just wasn't done. And there was no wine served at the table, at least not in my family, who were very conservative. We always ate very well, but it wasn't talked about.
Well, your family had a cook. Did your mother cook at all, and did you learn to cook at all?
No, she really didn't cook at all. She knew how to make baking powder biscuits and... Welch rabbit, and that's all she knew how to make. And I didn't do any cooking then, not at all.
You're over 6 feet tall, so I'm sure you were a very tall girl.
I'm the smallest in my family.
Oh, no. were you very athletic, and did you...
Oh, very, yes. I played tennis and golf and all kinds of things. I was very, very athletic, because one was in California anyway, because you could... do outdoor activities.
Were you comfortable with your height, or were you self-conscious about it?
Well, I didn't like dancing school when I was much taller than the boys. But I don't know. I got used to it perfectly easily.
When you graduated from college, you went to New York with the hopes of becoming a novelist or of writing for a magazine.
Or writing for The New Yorker, or at least getting into Time or Newsweek. Nobody wanted me for some strange reason.
Why did you want to write, and were you sure that you wanted to have a career?
Well, I was. I thought I was romantic about the idea of writing or being on the stage. In those days, too, everyone was fascinated with the theater. But I wanted to do one or the other, and then I got a job at W&J Sloan's furniture store in advertising and publicity, which I enjoyed very much. And then along came the war, and I got into the... I went down to Washington and eventually got into the Office of Strategic Services, the OSS.
Did you want to be a spy?
I did want to be a spy, and I thought I'd be a very good one because no one would think that someone as tall as I would possibly be a spy. But, of course, I ended up doing office, menial office work. I was in the files the whole time, which I... Actually, though, well, it was fascinating as an organization to be in, and at least I knew everything that was going on.
Well, you were telling us how being in the OSS led you overseas. You lived for a while in China. I think you lived for a while in India.
Yep, Ceylon. It was Ceylon in China.
And then after the war, you're telling us you went to Washington, then went back to Paris, went to Paris and lived there. This was in the late 1940s. So you had wonderful food in Paris.
It was just marvelous. It was still the old classical cuisine. It was just delicious. I've never had such good food again as we had then.
Well, how did eating wonderful food lead you to want to start preparing wonderful food?
Well, I was very much impressed with the food, and I just had, having started in cooking after we got married, I decided I would go to the Cordon Bleu, and they had kind of a classes for what we call fluffies. What it did at that same time, they were having some classes for the GIs on the Bill of Rights, and I decided after doing a little bit that I would really like to do much more serious delving into cuisine so that I was able to join the GIs. And they didn't object, luckily. And we started in at 7 in the morning and finished at around 11. And then I would rush home and prepare a fancy lunch for my husband, Paul. In those days, too, the American embassy followed the two-hour lunch, French lunch hour, so we always came home for lunch. And then, but in those days, two middle-class women were not going into cooking, either the French or the Americans. And the French, of course, all had maids. It was the way we had lived before the war in the USA.
So the other students were mostly chefs?
So nobody, no people that I knew, either French or American, were at all interested in the mechanics of cooking. But then at some party through a mutual friend, I met my colleague Simon Beck, Simka, who was, as I was, tremendously interested in cooking, but she knew a great deal about it. She'd worked with old Henri Pellepas and so forth. And eventually, because we began working together, eventually we started a little cooking school called L'École des Trois Gourmands, and Simka and her friend Louisette were writing a book on French cooking for Americans, and they needed a collaborator. So that's how eventually Volume 1 of Mastering came into being.
Mastering the Art of French
Mastering
Cooking.
Mastering the Art of French Cooking, you know.
On this archive edition of Fresh Air, we're featuring a 1989 interview with Julia Child. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Julia Child, when you co-wrote Mastering the Art of French Cooking, did you see it as a way to introduce Americans to French cuisine?
Yes, I was tremendously interested in French cuisine because it's the only cuisine that has the real rules on how to cook. And I wanted, because I had started in quite late. I was about in my early 30s when I started cooking. And I found that the recipes in all the books I had were really not adequate. They didn't tell you enough. And I'm, for one, I won't do anything unless I'm told why I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt that we needed fuller explanations so that if you followed one of those recipes, it should turn out exactly right. And that's why the recipes are very long, but they have full detail. And my feeling is that once you know everything and have digested it, then it becomes part of you.
You became nationally famous in the United States for your cooking show. I read that your cooking show started because you were a guest on someone else's show when your book Mastering the Art of French Cooking
mm-hmm.
came out, and there was such a big response that they gave you your own show. At that time
when they did a book review, and I had to do something. You can't just talk about it. So I beat up some egg whites in a big copper bowl, that kind of thing that people had not seen before, and I made an omelet. And at that time, there were no cooking shows at all on television. And people said, well, why don't we have a cooking show? And so I did three pilots, and they got a lot of response because there weren't any on at that point, and French cooking was very much in vogue. And at that time, also, public television was mostly talking heads. And they wanted to have something that was a little more lively. And so that's how it really started in.
Were your early shows live?
No, nothing was live, but the early shows, because we were very, very, very strict budget, it was really live on tape.
Mm-hmm.
And so once we started in, we didn't stop at all, unless there was a terrible disaster, and we only had about two or three, I think.
Tell me one of the terrible disasters.
Well, one time I was cooking, blanching some broccoli, and it was in a salad basket, which was lowered into a big kettle, and when I picked it up, my fork slipped, and it all fell on the floor. I didn't pick it up and use it, so we did stop, because it was a real mess. But every time we stopped, it would cost, several hundred dollars, because it always took half an hour to get back again. And you'd have to pay overtime. And another time there was a short circuit on my microphone, and every time I touched the stove, the microphone would go and I'd clutch my breast. So we had to stop for that. But otherwise, we just didn't stop at all. And then people would say, well, I saw you drop that chicken on the floor, which, of course, I never did. All I did was flip a potato pancake into the stove. And then I put it back into the pan, and I said, well, if you're all alone in the kitchen, nobody will know. It's funny that people saw me do that to a chicken. Isn't that funny how people will say that?
So were there often mistakes in the actual show that you would recover from, thinking that, well,
yes,
this kind of thing happens all the time?
And I think some people would accuse me of doing things purposely, but anyone who's been in the kitchen knows that awful things happen all the time, and you just, if you're a cook, you have to make do with whatever happens.
I'm sure you must have seen the Dan Aykroyd Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yes, we have a tape of that. That's great fun.
What he'd always do is, when he was doing you, is take little nips of wine until he got really giddy while he was cooking.
And then people accuse me of that, too, which, of course, I know Frank Pryle of the New York Times said that he saw me pick up a bottle and drink out of it, which, of course, I would never do in public. But I think his book didn't sell very well, so I don't care. No, I would never. I mean, would be a very gauche thing to do in public, wouldn't it?
Julia Child recorded in 1989. You can see her on public television this spring when she begins a new season of her series, Cooking with Master Chefs.